Life is a series of chapters, each with its own season. We need to experience all of them to truly live a life worth living. I had the pleasure of speaking with Sonia recently, and our discussion was so fascinating in that Sonia used her life experiences to take me along a mental journey from Scotland to Japan to Malaysia and India and finally to Iceland. As an avid traveler, I love exploring new places and learning new things. And Sonia's philosophy of looking at life as a series of chapters in a book gave me a fresh perspective to travel. Sonia encourages everyone to use any opportunity they get to see the world and learn from it. People, places, culture, and diversity all have this quality to teach us so many things that are far beyond what we learn in the classroom. Sonia certainly has used this approach to live her life as one big adventure. She navigated architectural studies, academia, entrepreneurship, and most recently motherhood with such ease and grace. When the doors to a career in architecture closed temporarily, she used creativity and an outside-the-box approach to land a gig in India that helped her transition into academia. Sonia has this calm grace about her that is so apparent in this entire interview, and not to mention that fascinating Scottish burgh. Even though Sonia has lived and worked all over the world, she never experienced culture shock. She says that even though culture shock is very normal, having a relaxed attitude about it is the way to go. The more you fight cultural issues or just culture shock in general, the more challenging it can become. But if you just relax into it and let it take over you, then you really do get rewarded. And it's fascinating how the people you meet, the opportunities that come along, and the diversity of things around you teach you so much more about life in general. And throwing yourself into the actual culture is like throwing yourself into the deep end. You will learn how to swim. Sonia looks at life as a series of chapters, each having its own time, place, and learning that helps us move along to the next chapter in this book of life. Currently, her life's chapter is in Iceland as a mom, entrepreneur, artist, and wife to a Viking. She casually throws in northern lights, rugged landscapes, and geysers as part of her everyday, and you cannot help but get the feeling of wanting to travel to Iceland to see it all for yourself. I cannot wait for you to dig in and go on a virtual travel adventure with Sonia in this episode of Culturally Ours.
Welcome to Culturally Ours, a show where we explore global cultural diversity in an intimate way through conversations and narratives around lifestyle, culture, food, art, and travel. Host Karthika Gupta talks to people from all over the world who have intimately experienced different cultures as a way to understand each other's worlds from the inside out, focusing on what we have in common.
Welcome, Sonia. Thank you so much for joining me all the way from Iceland. I cannot tell you how excited I am to be chatting with you today.
Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, it's really cool to do this.
Absolutely. So you currently live in Iceland. You live with your husband, as you like to say, a Viking, and a sweet little baby girl, right?
Yes.
But can you tell me a little bit about sort of your life's journey that has got you to Iceland?
Sure. So I've been in Iceland for about 2.5 years now. And the main reason for moving here is my husband, the Viking. So I met Ingmar the traditional way in a bar back in Edinburgh in Scotland. He was over on a trip with his mates. And I was actually not living in Scotland at the time, so it was quite a strange encounter. And I saw these kind of rugged-looking Vikings, asked them where they were from because they didn't look Scottish. They said Iceland, and I responded with, wow, nobody lives there. What do you mean? And that was it. Got the ball rolling, and somehow he managed to convince me to move here myself.
That is such an interesting story, and I can almost picture this bar and this rugged Viking. <Yeah. laughs> Now, you are from Scotland, so can you tell us a little bit about, you know, Scotland and where you grew up and your family?
Yes, it's not that different from Iceland, really. Iceland's a bit more kind of extreme in the landscapes, but I grew up just on the outskirts of Edinburgh, which is the capital city, and it's full of amazing architecture. I'm very lucky where we grew up. We have the Pentland Hills in our background, back garden, so you can kind of roam out up the mountains and enjoy the beautiful landscape, but also go into the city centre and see all the amazing historical architecture, which clearly inspires me in my work. So I come from a very proud Scottish family. We have a clan name, Nicholson, which also has a tartan, and you know, all these ideas of Scotland and tartans and haggis and ceilidh dancing and all of that come, you know, they're very, very true and they're very strong in my heritage, in my family life.
Wow, you just like took me back to when I was growing up and, you know, watching some of the movies and reading some of the books. It's like the whole clan and the tartan, yeah, and everything. Wow, so that's really how you grew up.
Yes, yeah, absolutely, yep.
Wonderful. What are some of your sort of core memories of Scotland? You talked about the hills and you talked about the architecture, but is there something else that sort of really almost like, you know, kind of made you who you are?
I think it does sound funny, but when you're growing up in Scotland, you always do like country dancing at school. And I went on to do Highland dancing as well, which is where you do sword dancing and you dance in your kilt and things like that. So it sounds like something, you know, out of a movie or whatever, but it was just my weekly hobby that I did. Highland dancing, and I danced at people's weddings and things like that. So, you know, we have all these unique parts of our heritage that are just normal kind of activities for us. We're very proud to be Scottish, and I suppose when you travel abroad, you become even more proud of where you come from. And when you have conversations about coming from Scotland, you talk about things like ceilidh dancing and whiskey, of course, and even down to fish and chips and deep fried Mars bars and all that sort of thing.
And the accent. I love your accent. I could listen to you like forever.
I feel like my accent gets a little bit diluted wherever you travel, but that's good to hear.
True. No, that is true. But I feel like yours is, from what I've, you know, again, just from movies and, you know, hearing people, I feel like yours is pretty strong.
Yeah.
But, you know, you obviously know it better. What made you decide to leave such a beautiful place?
Yeah, it's quite a hard question, actually. travel was always very important as a family. We took a family holiday every single year. We were very lucky when we were growing up that we got to do that, and we got to do school trips and all that kind of thing. I also travelled with Girl Guiding, but I guess the travel bug really hit me when I took a gap year. So I studied architecture, which is a very long degree. It's 7 years. So I took a gap year at year five between my degree and my master's. And I went off to Singapore, Kuala Lumpur, and did around Australia. So I got to see some stunning architecture, some buildings that I'd studied and dreamt about visiting, which was fantastic. And then returning back to finish my master's, I actually got a scholarship to finish my master's in Japan, which then increased the travel bug and then led me on to coming back to the UK, and then the recession hit and I ended up heading off on a completely different challenge and actually ended up in India. So I've kind of, I think I'm meant to always be traveling every now and then.
Oh my gosh, it definitely sounds like it. Now, you said a few things and I want to sort of backtrack a little. So you said you had a gap year in architecture, and what made you decide to kind of go almost to the other corner of the world, right? From Scotland, you made yourself go to Malaysia and Singapore. Why did you do that? Why did you kind of go there and not somewhere else in Europe or, you know, the States?
Yeah, that's definitely a hard question. I think I wanted to just really push the boundaries. And I'd studied some very classical architecture, which is probably more in the European context. But I was very much into iconic, modern skyscraper kind of buildings. I love cities like New York, but I really wanted to go and see buildings like the, you know, the Petronas Towers, really iconic buildings like that and actually, after reading them, go into them and get to walk across that bridge and really kind of explore them and get to draw them right in front of them as well.
Yeah, so a little side story here, because I don't talk about this much, but my dad actually worked in Malaysia for 20 plus years, and I lived there, and I worked there as well for a little bit, and the Petronas Towers is such an amazing sight.
That's incredible, yeah.
I think I was there right around the time that they were building it, and, you know, the inauguration, they let you go up all, you know, up everywhere and walk. It was just so magnificent, and for a country like Malaysia, to have something like this was, you know, true testimony to moving forward and, you know, kind of being a part of technology and innovation and things like that. So it's a totally side note. But yeah, I can, when you said walk the bridge, absolutely. I was like, oh, I've done that.
Yeah. Well, I flew into Singapore, and the idea was to approach KL by road so I would see them in the distance. That kind of sounds quite an extreme planning, but that basically a lot of my travels were surrounding buildings and architecture, and that was the main purpose for me, was to go and see all of these buildings I'd studied and admired the architects behind them.
No, it's amazing that you've sort of, what I'm hearing is that you have, from a young age, you knew what you wanted to do, and everything that you have sort of done or sort of has happened with you has sort of solidified you more on that path, you know, architecture and then traveling the world, because that travel bug, like you said, was something that you had as a family. Mm-hmm. And then kind of going all over the world. I mean, Singapore, Malaysia, and then Japan, and then India.
No, I feel very, very lucky. But I think that you do have to take the opportunities when they come along. And a lot of the different, like each country that I visited kind of reflects a chapter in my life. And architecture is always kind of a key player in all of that. So Japan was, you know, it was university time. It was about new technology and the energy and learning and pushing myself and making connections and all of that kind of thing. And then India was, it was part of, you know, transition from architecture to academia because of the recession. There wasn't really any, necessarily any openings in architecture. And so I was thinking outside the box, and a door opened. So I went, and I had an amazing time, and it was inspiring. And you know, India is such a vibrant place, but it was full of challenges too. But the people there are so welcoming and so friendly, and they genuinely want to know who you are and where you've come from and what your family's like. And often they want to know all of that across an amazing meal. So yeah, there's fantastic things that came out of India as well. And I think all of this made me, you know, challenge me, but helped me grow as an individual. India is definitely a place where I feel like most people are entrepreneurs. So that definitely affected me and made me kind of try to think about how I could set up some sort of business or kind of mini empire of my own from just using the internet. And India definitely taught me a lot of lessons on that as well. And then Iceland is kind of the direct opposite and is a much calmer place and you know, hugely different in the context of the landscape and the amount of people living here and yet the weather, all sorts of things. So it's the calm place. It's kind of the chapter of my life where I'm settling down and marrying and, you know, starting a family and things like that. So yeah, they're all quite reflective of chapters of my life.
I love the way you said it. And it's such a beautiful way to look at all your experiences in life, like chapters. And, you know, kind of in hindsight, you can relate to everything that's happened specific to that chapter, right? You've gone from architecture to academia to now owning your own business. And it's all sort of flown with your experiences in all these different places. So let's kind of move into your business. So what do you do now? How have you taken architecture, academia, you know, lessons learned from India, Japan, Singapore? How has all of that culminated to what you do now?
A whole lot of things. So basically everything is run through my website, which is layoutlines.com. And that comes from the idea of laying out a building, so laying out designs. So I offer lots of different things. So there's one is the design service, where there's architecture, commissions, planning permission, all that kind of thing. So the architecture side of it. The next part is for students, which I always wanted a place for students to connect and to almost kind of feel like they can speak to me about any of their projects on a very kind of casual way. So it's not like a scary lecturer or professor or something, but there's just someone that they can tweet or DM on Instagram or email or whatever. So I have an e-course on there, but there's also e-tutorials. So if someone wants to just have a 30-minute tutorial over a project or something that they're doing for their dissertation, then that's a service that's available to them, and we can just FaceTime. So it's really casual, and hopefully will be much more approachable for them as well. Then there's also the online shop where I sell all of my work, and a lot of that is, you know, drawings from my travels and from the buildings that I see in everyday life and that inspire me. And then there's also the videos on YouTube where I try to share a bit of life in Iceland. So there's a whole variety there.
Yes, you have your hands full.
But I'm being a mom.
Yes, and being a mom to a 4-month-old, right?
Yes.
I said this before, and I want to say it again. I feel like everything that you have done has been, it sort of fits like a glove. Your experiences to how you've now made it a part of your life, your business. I'm sure it wasn't as smooth sailing as you make it sound to be. Were there any challenges that you faced as you were sort of trying to navigate these waters of, you know, different cultures, different countries, even your own sort of growth from architecture, academia to entrepreneurship? I mean, can you talk a little bit about maybe some challenges that you faced?
I think that travel is something that really opened your mind, and it's something that almost kind of forces you to be a little bit more relaxed and just appreciate what's going on around you. And of course, culture shock is a huge thing. And so I think, you know, you have almost like a love-hate relationship with wherever you're living at the time. And that can be your home country as well, of course.
Right.
I think India is probably the one that taught me the most that you can't fight it, you just have to go with it. The more you fight kind of cultural issues or just culture shock in general, then the more challenging it can become. And actually, if you just relax into it and just let it take over you, then you really do get rewarded. And it's fascinating, the people that you meet and the opportunities that come along and the diversity, the things that you can learn from meeting genuine people and throwing yourself into the actual culture, throwing yourself into the deep end. Yeah,
I love it.
So if you kind of adopt that a part of the culture, then you will be rewarded in some way. That's kind of how I try to see it. It's hard to do, but it's worth doing.
No, absolutely. I think it is. You're in that situation. There's nothing you can do about it. So rather than kick and scream and, you know, kind of make yourself miserable or sick or worse, just kind of go with the flow. And life is different and interesting no matter where you are. It's just the perspective, right?
Yeah. There's no right or wrong way to do things. Everything's different in different countries, and we can all learn from parts of it.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let's come to Iceland. It is this dream destination for so many people. I mean, you know, you touched upon this earlier, the dramatic landscapes, the weather. But how is it really like for a local such as yourself to be living in a place like Iceland? What are the people like? What's the culture like?
It's a very relaxed place. So A lot of the people here are quite kind of chilled out, and they might say that they're stressed, but after living in the UK and India and Japan, they're definitely not stressed. It's a very much relaxed, calm kind of attitude. They almost have this saying that's tittariddust. It means kind of everything will work out in the end. And that's really is the attitude of the people here. Of course, you've got the rugged, wild, harsh landscape, and you've got the threat of volcanoes and real things like that happening. But it's quite funny because I live in the capital city, and although, you know, we have volcanoes around and not that far from us, I don't actually know what the evacuation policy would be. so, yeah, I guess I've adopted this mentality of tittariddust. yeah. But yes, you do live with things like, I don't know, I suppose I take it for granted that we have the Northern Lights. And I'm almost driving around in the evening and they're there and I don't even look up anymore. But we see them from our balcony window. I've watched them whilst doing the dishes. So I'm incredibly lucky that I have that, because so many people travel here to see them and don't actually get a clear night to even see a performance of them dancing. So that is a natural wonder that is part of my everyday life. but yes, we do have this harsh winter and extreme daylight in the summer. So in the winter, right now it's getting dark, and in the peak of winter, you've got about 4 hours of daylight. And then in the summer, it's pretty much 20 to 22 hours of daylight. So
wow. Yeah,
it's quite extreme. It was quite nice that we had Mia in the summertime, and learning to breastfeed and get up throughout the night when there was still a beautiful sunrise, sunset happening, wasn't too bad. But in the winter, I think it's going to be quite a different story.
Yeah, but it sounds like the attitude, and even your attitude, is that it's all right. Everything will work out in the end. We'll figure it out, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
It's the when you were talking about the Northern Lights and washing dishes, I was like, oh my God.
I know, isn't it crazy that I've just gotten so used to that?
I have yet to see them, and I've been trying so hard. Like, I would love to come to Iceland sometime, but even here, like kind of getting into Minnesota and, you know, the upper parts of the US, I'm like, I really want to see it, but I haven't been so fortunate.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. It's so hard to explain what it looks like, but it is an incredible sight to see.
Oh wow, I'm sure. And just I think just the way you described it, right? The ruggedness, the volcano, the like nature almost at its best, and everybody just sort of maybe that calm attitude, and that, you know, whatever will happen, it's okay, sort of is a testament to where you are, right? I mean, you're surrounded by all this beauty. Let's take in everything and not be stressed out and not worry about, you know, all the mundane things that perhaps really don't matter in the grand scheme of things.
Yep. Just worry about the wind.
So when you moved to Iceland, did you face any sort of challenges, or your sort of path all over the world kind of prepared you for anything that kind of life threw your way?
Yeah, it definitely prepared me for it. This is not so challenging a transition. So Iceland and Scotland aren't too dissimilar from each other. And they're, you know, it's similar climate, similar kind of similar nature. the food is slightly different, that's for sure. But this is definitely an easier place to transition into than Japan or India was. And because I'm at a different point in my life, so I moved here for love. and so, yeah, I think that helps. I didn't move here for a challenge of the adventure or studying or for work or whatever. It was for a different purpose. So I think that's kind of helped as well.
Yeah. Now, for people, and I ask this question because, you know, we read about this quite a bit with Iceland and the, you know, the burst of tourism and you know, just the popularity, I guess, of Iceland, right? So do you have any advice from a local's perspective, perhaps, of people who are traveling to Iceland on, you know, how to make the most of their trip, but still being kind of cognizant of, know, where they are?
Iceland is, well, I mean, it's obviously a very, very beautiful place, and most of what people are coming here to see is the nature. And so we have had a huge increase in tourism here. And it's obviously that has its pros and cons. And the one thing that I do worry about is, because it's such a natural landscape that people are coming to see, and it's, you know, thousands of people walking over all these natural paths, that you do worry about what that's going to look like in the future. And so, you know, Iceland hopefully is looking at a way of respecting that and encouraging tourists to respect that. The tourism board here has a policy, a kind of pledge that they ask tourists to take, which is called the Icelandic Pledge, which is about responsible tourism and looking after the landscape here, so not stepping on the moss, on the lava, because as soon as you touch it, it will die. And you know, you've got erupting geysers that are a very real thing,
right?
And there's not, you know, you don't want to necessarily disturb the landscape by putting up warning signs everywhere and red tape around it and things like that, but real things do happen here, and you do hear about scary stories. But yeah, I mean, there's also the history of tourism here is that, you know, the geysers, there were a number of geysers, and I think, I don't know, it was probably 50 plus years back, what they used to do was actually put fairy liquid into the geyser to make it bubble more and erupt higher to perform more for the tourists, and I think to perform more often as well. And in the end, that actually killed the geyser, so it doesn't erupt anymore. So I hope that, you know, Iceland actually is a bit more educated on tourism and the effect, or the long-term effect, that it can have on the natural habitat here. And hopefully all these things, all these amazing hot pools and geysers and waterfalls and the glacier lagoon and ice caves and all these amazing things that people come to see will hopefully be here for generations to come.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's kind of a scary thing when, you know, they kind of did that to attract more tourism, but now it's like sort of gone beyond something that they expected. And so they're kind of backtracking. And we see this happen pretty much everywhere. I know with India too, I mean, Taj Mahal, with, you know, just pollution, the sheer number of people. It started to kind of lose the whiteness of the marble. So there was a huge restoration project to, you know, with like scaffolding and all of that stuff, because it's a world, you know, it's world renowned. And
yeah, and once it's damaged, it's very difficult to get back. And if it's a natural landscape, once it's damaged, then that's it, really.
Absolutely. That's even worse, I think. Oh, well, I'm glad to hear that there are, like, the Icelandic pledge and, you know, things like that, that things that are in motion to perhaps kind of, you know, reduce that effect of over-tourism and kind of, you know, people just abusing the landscape, I guess.
Just respecting nature, yep.
Yeah, so let's come back to your life. So how did your family sort of react to all these changes in your life? And, you know, now you've gone back to Scotland as well. And how has that changed? Did you find Scotland also changed quite a bit since you've been away?
I think they're used to me traveling. So I've been kind of doing this for about a decade. Between all of the different places, but I come and go back and forth to Edinburgh to visit people, and obviously my family loves visiting me as well. They especially love to come over to India, and a lot of my friends came out as well. And with the internet, the world is so much smaller, and FaceTime is, you know, just a normal thing now. Mia has seen her gran on FaceTime, and it's, you know, it's a lovely thing that you can just pick up the phone and you can actually have a video call. And it doesn't feel so different from, you know, being too far away from people these days.
Right, right.
Yeah.
No, that's great. Yeah, totally. I mean, I remember when I first moved to the States, there was no smartphones. email was just coming up. So it was like actually the physical, you know, picking up the phone and punching in the number and speaking and, you know, being a poor student. It wasn't something that I could do every day. So it was like a once a week call back home. And now I can't imagine not kind of connecting and, you know, chatting with people, FaceTiming on a regular basis. So you're right, the internet has made the world such a small place. I mean, look at us, we're chatting, sitting in Chicago and Iceland. So how do you, you're here in Iceland, you're from Scotland, how do you find yourself sort of integrating these two cultures in your day-to-day? Is it like food or art or any other way that you find yourself integrating, or is it more natural and you don't even think about it?
I don't think it's food. The food here, kind of Icelandic food, is things like fermented chard and licorice. Everything has licorice in it, and I hate licorice. Food is the one key element that brings us together here. Actually, Ingmar and I probably eat more curry than anything.
Really?
From Scotland or Iceland, yeah. I think food has been a key element that came out of my time in India. But yeah, I've, obviously the relaxed way of or pace of life is probably something that I've tried to adopt. I am a bit of a workaholic though, so that's been maybe the biggest challenge for Iceland. But yeah, the idea of this kind of hibernating in winter time and being much more relaxed and calmer and enjoying hot pools and northern lights and kind of just taking a bit more me time and downtime is what winter is about, and summer is much more about the energy. And you know, we don't really have sunshine, but we have sunlight, and so you've got a lot more hours to do work. So I tend to kind of use those two opposites and kind of try to relax in the winter time and sort of hibernate a little bit, and then in the summertime I go for it, and that's when I'm producing new collections of artwork or whatever project I'm working on.
Isn't it amazing? I mean, at the end of the day, to realize that so much of our body is so tuned with nature and our surroundings, right? I mean, you know, India, there's, you know, winter, there's no winter. It's just hot and hotter. So, you know, you're kind of on the whole year, right? You are constantly doing something. You are, you know, whether it's projects or work or life and home, there's always something going on, versus a place like Iceland or even like in Chicago when it starts to get cold. I can feel myself sort of visibly slowing down.
I know, it's really interesting. Yep. I think that's why spring is such a fascinating concept, because you really do feel like the earth is coming alive again, and you get the energy from that as well.
Absolutely. I mean, just the fact that, you know, you get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and it's already so bright outside, you're ready to tackle your day, versus in winter when it's like dark for us here at like 3:30, you're like, okay, I'm just going to have a slow evening, you know, put on some music or just going to chill out, not like freak out.
Yeah.
I wish we could all sort of experience that, moving with the flow of nature and seasons and the earth, you know, because there's a lot of lessons to be learned there.
Yeah.
So what is next for you? I mean, are you sort of, I know you've had lots of things happen in the past few years, and most recently your daughter, so congratulations on that. What are your plans for the future? I mean, what lies ahead for you?
Well, I think the Icelandic mentality has kind of worn on me, because I don't really have like a long-term plan. But yes, the short term is that I'm working on a range of Iceland-inspired prints at the moment, and so I'm looking to get them out and in shops, and hopefully get a range of postcards as well, and yeah, moving into different products, so concentrating on the online shop and getting some physical products in shops here as well, which is kind of a first for me, so that's pretty exciting.
That does sound exciting. And a lot of your artwork is, like the pen, like it's like a black and white, right?
It's definitely an architectural type of drawing. So, pen and ink. I don't often put too much colour in my work, but in the new range, there is some colour coming into there. So I'm kind of stepping outside my comfort zone there.
There you go. I think that's exciting. Thank you so much, Sonia. This has been such an incredible treat. I mean, you took me along your journey. I was there, right there in Scotland, you know, probably surrounded by men in kilts. And you took me along to India and, you know, I walked the bridge, Petronas, with you. That was an amazing experience. So thank you for that mental experience. And Iceland, I mean, gosh, you just... I really want to go. And I'm like, oh, I can stay with Sonia. I know her now.
Absolutely. Come and visit.
So thank you so much. This was such a wonderful conversation. And I wish you the very best on everything.
Thank you. And thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Culturally Ours. Check out the show notes at culturallyours.com. If you've enjoyed the show, please be sure to hit subscribe, leave us a review, and share it with your family and friends.